This week's episode is sponsored by Amico & Co, the full-service refit shipyard at the heart of the Med, with large yacht facilities, in-house departments and berthing at its waterfront marina. To find out more, visit amicoshipyard.com. Hello everyone and welcome to this week's Boat Briefing. I'm Caroline White and here with me to talk through the latest in the world of superyachting is our travel and charter editor, Georgia Boscawen. And we actually have quite a bit of travel and charter to talk about this week, so we've got a bit of a charter and travel theme. Georgia, you've just been on quite an adventure.
I have. It's a pleasure to be back on the pod.
Yeah, very nice to have you.
This is the first time we've done this together.
It is.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
And there are definitely some cool travel updates to chat about. First of all, however, I want to know how Monaco was, because I missed all of it.
Well, Stu and Gabby, I think, talked through it properly last week, all the sensible bits. But as always, from my point of view, it was a bit of a whirlwind. We hosted at least one party every day of the show.
Oh my God.
Yeah, our events team are heroes, including an Owners Club cocktail on Planet Nine, World Super Yacht Awards judges meeting on Kismet. I particularly love our Young Designer of the Year breakfast, which is hosted by FedShip, which is the sponsor of the awards. And we gather lots of legendary designers there and introduce them to loads of young designers who are working towards this year's Young Designer of the Year award. They can ask them how they got started, their advice on the task, on their career in general. It's just it's a mind-blowing opportunity for emerging talent in this industry. So I love that little
Amazing.
Event. Yeah, it's a good one. Then, of course, the big event at Monaco is the Boat International Party.
Our party,
yes. And this year it was held at the Monte Carlo Beach Club, which is a really beautiful setting around the pool. No one fell in this year. Someone did fall in the last time we held it at this venue.
Really?
Yeah, it was very dramatic.
That's embarrassing.
But nobody did this year, sadly. A shout out to our title sponsor, Ulyssia, the spectacular new 320-metre private residence superyacht. But it was a brilliant night of fun, chat, fantastic food. One of my colleagues ended up following the pasta guy back to the kitchen, basically, to make sure that nothing went to waste.
That's good.
Yep.
Do you know what? I remember having been in the industry before I worked here.
Yeah.
And going to Monaco and hearing about the party. We were chatting a little bit before the podcast about gate crashes.
Yeah.
That was probably me a few while ago, because it was such a draw, that party.
Yeah.
So I'm glad it was good.
Yeah, I mean, we do usually have, when we did this year as well, have attempted gate crashes, but our events team is a stone wall. So they didn't get in. But that hotel, if we're talking about travel and charter a bit this week, that hotel, the Monte Carlo Beach Club, I really love that one. It's Art Deco and it's a little bit removed from the bustle of Casino Square where the other grand hotels are clustered. It's just over the eastern border in France, actually. It was opened in 1929 and the aim was to lure in high-end summer tourism. So before that, the Côte d'Azur was really a winter destination where Northern Europeans and Russians would go to escape the very cold winters where they came from. So they basically drafted in this American gossip columnist called Elsa Maxwell to fill the hotel with fashionable people. She knew people like, she introduced Maria Callas to Aristotle Onassis.
Wow.
So she knew everyone. And she did. She did just that. She filled it with all the fashionable people of Europe and the US. And it became an absolute star of the Côte d'Azur. So
amazing.
The summer, as we know it, on the Côte d'Azur was really born at the Monte Carlo Beach Hotel.
Wow. Quite a job, that. Imagine being tasked with just trying to fill a hotel.
Yeah, I feel like you could do it, Georgia.
Oh, I don't know. Be filled with hotels. Hotel owners.
Hotel owners. And charter brokers.
And charter brokers, yeah. Not forgetting them.
No. So tell us, Georgia, that's a rather tame, lovely but tame destination. Tell us where you have been.
So I can't really believe I'm saying this, but I've just come back from Madagascar, of all places, all in the name of research. Super yacht research, and it was extraordinary. To be honest, the first thing that I did when I got back to my desk yesterday was Bagsy the podcast slot. As I just feel like I've got to chat about it and what an extraordinary place it is and the amazing potential that it has for super yachts.
Also,
it is surprising. And even while I was kind of gearing up to the trip, I mean, it's the seventh poorest country on the planet.
Wow.
So it doesn't really sound like it would be kind of have the infrastructure or anything that could provide super yachts with anything that he needed, or if it would be a bad thing to bring yachts to that area, which wouldn't be received well. But actually, it's an incredible place for yachts to go, and there is growing interest in the region. As I found out while I was there, the amount of messages that I got from captains and kind of expedition leaders saying, wow, oh, we are planning something here and we're doing this here. So it was really cool.
Great.
So it was quite an intense trip, but this is a good thing because we obviously wanted to fit in as much as we could. And I was there for a week, actually on the ground for a week, and obviously flying and stuff takes a bit of time. But what's interesting is you have to, well, we did it in a way where we fly to Reunion first. And again, I didn't really know anything about Reunion. Do you know anything about Reunion?
I know that they they have a lot of shots. So someone I know used to be used to surf there.
Oh, really?
And they had a lot of sharks. That's my knowledge of the Reunion.
I was assured that there were that there were not. Well, there are sharks, but not near where we were swimming.
Okay.
I was told, promised. But it's a really interesting place. So it's a French territory about 400 miles east of Madagascar, and it's literally France. It's just a bit hotter, and it has a volcano in the middle of it. But it is literally France, so you get off the plane and you're kind of, it's technically an internal flight from Paris to Reunion,
wow,
which is really extraordinary. But it's so French that I've never eaten so much foie gras, cheese and caviar in my life. And it's produced there, which is weird. The caviar is produced in Madagascar, and caviar is a massive export there. And same with foie gras. They have foie gras everywhere, like, I've never eaten so much of it in my life. Mm. But so this is on Reunion, and it's beautiful. There's loads to do there. There's great restaurants. And then when you get over to Madagascar, which is about an hour and a half flight, it's a completely different story. And it really hits you when you get out of the airport. You're kind of swarmed, and it's very much, you know, it's a completely different country. They've had a really interesting past, and it kind of manifests itself in loads of interesting culture. It's like a really interesting amalgamation of culture, but predominantly French speaking, but very much an African cultural shift from what it was like in Reunion. So what we did was spend a couple of days in Tana, which is the capital. Also, the full name is Antananarivo. That's wrong, Antananarivo, sorry. The capital in total is hugely intense. It's just, it hits you when you drive through it, and it's just markets everywhere, there's people everywhere, and it's really busy, there's loads of things to see, but there are also loads of great restaurants there, and like tucked around little corners, and you can kind of wander around these amazing bustling places and then turn a corner and you're like a beautiful little restaurant. So it's really extraordinary, it's really cool. And then, so we did a couple of days there, which is amazing, and then we flew up to St. Marie Island, and this was actually the main reason for our trip, to see a new hotel called Voara, and that's V-O-A-A-R-A, because I've probably pronounced that badly. But I've never been to a hotel since I've been doing this job that grasps the concept of barefoot luxury to such a brilliant degree.
Wow.
So you know when someone says we do barefoot luxury,
yeah,
and they kind of mean it, but you definitely need to put shoes on when you go to the bar. Like,
okay,
it's like, but I genuinely did not wear shoes at all. There's no, it's just sand everywhere and kind of the odd wooden slat.
Mm.
And it's unbelievably beautiful. So the way that Philippe has built the hotel is, it's all been built by hand, used from guys from the village. And it's kind of these beautiful wooden structures that really blends in with the land. And the thing that really struck me when we first arrived is that they've kept the lighting low everywhere. So you kind of go along the beach to the bar and you're a bit like, we had our phone torches on because we haven't really adjusted. And classic Westerners coming in. And then you get there and it's like really dim. It's basically candlelight.
Mm.
And there's no light pollution because it's the only property in miles. You can't see anything.
Wow.
So you're just looking out to sea, no lights out to sea. And then you've got the Milky Way overhead. So
incredible.
It's absolutely extraordinary. I mean, I went to Antarctica in February, and that weirdly this felt more isolated. I think probably because we weren't on a boat, but it was a really strong feeling of isolation, which I've never experienced really before to that degree.
Amazing.
And loads of stuff there once you're there. It's a humpback whale breeding ground. There's obviously loads of incredible wildlife that we don't get here, which is endemic to Madagascar. And the sea is, I would say, more luminous and turquoise than the Maldives.
Wow, incredible.
Amazing. I was thinking that as I was swimming. I was swimming sort of along the shore and just thinking, I can't believe this. It's mad. It's absolutely mad. It's such an interesting blend of building something there, because it's on this beautiful plot of land, but obviously that land is very important to the villagers and the people that live there. So Philippe, who is the owner of the hotel, or I should probably say founder, Philippe Kjellgen, he basically had to manage the locals to make sure that he was doing everything correctly and not creating an issue and making sure it was all done. So when we were there, he told us a story of how these worlds blend. And he had a meeting with the elders of the village, who said, you know, a lot of things have been happening and going wrong, and tools are breaking that shouldn't break, and while that, because they're still kind of doing the final bits of making sure everything's perfect. And they said, we need to do a sacrifice. And they wanted to sacrifice a zebu, which is the cow.
Yeah, the horns.
Yeah,
yes.
It was sort of like a sort of hump on the back of its neck. Yeah. And they wanted to do that and have a ritual. And he was like, absolutely, of course, that's what needs to be done. But it's just navigating these really interesting things that we would never experience. Mm. And he interestingly said, it's such an amazing thing to see and witness, because they actually have such a, like, these guys are, a lot of them are like, one of his guys went to university in France and really has a clear understanding of normal, like the life that we would consider normal, and still is like, well, this is what we need to do, because they are so, this is how
their
it works.
And it's
unbelievable. So really incredible to see that kind of blending in with the life that they've created there. Very special place. And they're doing a lot of good for the community as well. Pretty much everyone that works there is from the village, and it's an incredible project. But also I must add, we, of course, saw lemurs.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's why you go to Madagascar, isn't it?
That is why you go to Madagascar. That's why I went to Madagascar. No, I'm joking. but we were very lucky, because we had to really squeeze it in. And we took a boat to quite a rural place called Maswala. And we actually stayed in tents. Mm. I say tents. They were kind of on stilts. But that was like proper... It was amazing. Like, we had the sides of the tent open, and you can hear everything going on around you, like in the middle of the rainforest. And we were very lucky to see the red ruff lemur, which make a hell of a racket. It's a weird noise. Like, it sounds, it's just like this really intense bleating.
Oh, right.
And overhead. And it's extraordinary. But we did that, we saw that in the day, and they are so incredible and beautiful. And we also, but at night you do this thing called a night walk, and you go and walk around the camp, and you see, we saw mouse lemurs, all these bats, kind of getting really close and seeing them sleeping, and we're really sleeping at night, but there we go. And loads of, we saw a very rare dwarf lemur, which you don't see much, and they kind of come up, and they're very inquisitive, and they don't see very well, so it's, they'll come up and have a look. So it's amazing. And the whole thing, I was really blown away by, it felt so far removed and beautiful from what I've seen before that I really can't recommend it enough as a place.
It sounds spectacular. But I mean, is this, where in the world, just for people who don't know, where in the world is Madagascar?
So it's off the coast. So it's obviously in the African continent, or just off the African continent. And it's off the coast of Tanzania. Weirdly, a lot of people don't know that Madagascar is bigger than France.
Really?
So it's huge.
Wow.
It's a huge country. And it's got this incredible ecosystem which is endemic to the country. So you see things there that you'll never see anywhere else, which is part of the reason why it's such a special place to visit. And I actually, I was speaking to Tim Soper from EOS, the co-founder of EOS, yesterday about Madagascar, because he's had some experience there of creating super yacht trips down there. And I just wanted to get from him a kind of some pointers for yachting and where the potential is and what it would be like to actually charter down there or take a yacht down there. You have airstrips everywhere, often very close to the water, so it's easy transfer and short transfers to yacht. There's only 1 to 2 hours time difference from Europe. Normally more tropical places, this remote, would be more than that, so there's no jet lag. Unique wildlife, as we've spoken about. Very welcoming to yachts, he says. It's such a new thing down there and with no yachting infrastructure. So people tend not to pay too much attention to yachts when you're there. So that's quite a nice thing with places like this, is that it's not going to disrupt, it's not going to be disruptive, and it's not going to be kind of, no one's going to care that you're there. And they will see it as just another thing, really. It's the only place in the world where you can hike safely in a tropical rainforest at night due to the absence of any large predators.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Hence you keeping your tent
exactly
open.
Yeah. I had to do a bit of Googling to make sure there was absolutely nothing. There were snakes, but apparently they don't bite you, according to the
still
camp
not that
leader.
Yeah. Snake cuddling up
the interest. So there could potentially be an increase in yachts visiting there if they are avoiding the Suez Canal and going around the Cape of Good Hope from Asia and the Indian Ocean to Europe. So we did actually, we can find a link to the story and put it below, but we did actually do a story on very well-traveled yachts, and it seems that people are doing that more just to avoid that canal. But whichever way you choose, but it's a really great, it's got some potential. Although very poor, Madagascar is amazingly safe. People are very friendly, and there are no big security threats from piracy or extremists that you would potentially find elsewhere in Africa. And there's no difficult clearance or visa requirements too, as there aren't many restrictions on where yachts can go and what they can do, which is wonderful. As we found when we came over from Reunion, you sort of just need your passport and yourself, and which is great for anyone that's planning on visiting.
That sounds fantastic, Georgia. So you mentioned there that you went to Antarctica in February, and now you've been to Madagascar. Where else do you think has the potential for a far-flung superyacht destination that is perhaps opening up a bit more?
Ooh, so I think South America. I know that yachts go there and they do the kind of amazing trip around Cape Horn, but I think that's got more potential. I think there's much more things that you can see there other than just cruise down the coast and see the glaciers. It's got, again, really beautiful culture that's very all the way down the coast, and there are penguins there as well. So
this is in South America.
Yeah.
Wow, amazing.
So that'd be cool. But I was actually earlier in the year, I was looking into the Black Sea potential. I basically think that cruising to Georgia, not just because it's my name, but Georgia, I think it would be really interesting. A few journalists have said to me that it's one of the most beautiful places they've ever seen.
Wow.
And it's also the birthplace of wine, which is a bonus.
Yeah.
Lots of vineyard tours. But I spoke to some brokers about this to see if we could get some charter potential there, and I genuinely couldn't get one. There's no restriction. But I couldn't, and there were people saying, well, we could, but there's been no interest.
Mm.
So I think it needs some exploring. I think it would be such a cool thing to explore, and it's got a beautiful coast, and there's so much to understand and know about. It's just not something that, it's not somewhere that people would often travel to.
No.
So I think that'd be really cool.
So perhaps one for the explorers among us to get started and open it up for other people.
Yeah, or me.
Or you, or Georgia. Get Georgia on board. So speaking of regions that are opening up, one for the radar, this month NEOM has released the first interior images of the Sindala Yacht Club ahead of Sindala Island's official opening later this year. So if you're not familiar with NEOM, That's NEOM. It's one of Saudi Arabia's giga projects that you may have heard about. It spans an area about the size of Belgium.
Bloody hell.
Big. So within within that, Sindala Island, which measures 840,000 square metres, will be a holiday destination that's squarely aimed at yacht owners. And it aims to be the number one yachting destination in the Red Sea. So wow. When it opens, the ambition is to have 60 to 80 boats there for the launch.
Oh my gosh. Are we going to the launch?
Well, I haven't received my invitation yet.
No, me neither.
So the yacht club itself, that's going to be part of Sindala Island, is 1,800 square metres, and it's going to be managed by IGY Marinas, with a pool, a lounge, berthing facilities, and yachts up to 180 metres will be able to berth in the neighbouring Sindala Marina.
Wow. So every yacht then.
Yeah, and it's interesting, IGY Marinas, they're getting in to manage that. They're getting, for most of the sort of projects that they're doing, they're importing expertise from people who know what they're doing. So this isn't just a random bunch of people doing something. They're people with lots of experience.
Amazing.
Yeah, in terms of what there is to do, there'll be golf, sports clubs, beach clubs, 3 luxury hotels. So plenty of reasons to make the trip.
Amazing. And are there any yachts planning to actually do that?
So Tom Schroeder, who's the owner of the new 44-metre Cantieri Delamarque Maverick, which we're hoping to cover in a forthcoming issue, told us that at Monaco Yacht Show that he would be heading down there. And last week, it looked like Serene was on its way there as well. So it'll be really interesting to hear feedback from the first visitors there.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll keep an eye on it on our boat pro as well.
Absolutely. You can stalk
exactly.
So now some news. Do you want to kick us off with what's been going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So we have some news from Benetti, which has introduced a brand new range of super yachts to its product lineup, beginning with a 65-metre model called the B-Loft 65-metre. Very good. Aptly named. revealed at the Monaco Yacht Show, initial renders show a minimalist profile with uninterrupted lines of full-height glazing along each of the upper decks. According to the shipyard, the new series aims to revolutionise the onboard experience with lofty 4-metre-high ceilings inspired by the airy layouts of metropolitan residential spaces. Designed throughout by Giorgio Cassetta of Cassetta Yacht Designers, the B-Loft 65-metre is characterised by a cabana-style beach club with a pair of fold-out wings for panoramic oceanfront access.
This does look, if you see the renderings on our website, it really is beautiful.
Is it?
It's going to be a lovely exciting line, I think. This bit of news is rather UK-centric, so apologies to anyone who is not UK-centric.
Yeah, but we're very happy about it.
But we're very happy that our very own columnist, Sir Ben Ainslie, and his team Ineos Britannia has won the Louis Vuitton Cup. That's after an intense battle with Luna Rossa Prada Pirelli from Italy. And that means that Great Britain has qualified for the America's Cup for the first time since 1964.
Oh my God. Which
actually I didn't know and I was slightly embarrassed about. So the Cup begins on the 12th of October and we'll see Ineos Britannia square off against the defending team Royal New Zealand Yacht Squadron.
Amazing.
And we should also mention that the 2024 Barcelona Superyacht Regatta, a 3-day racing event that's running alongside the Cup, wrapped up last weekend. It was organised by the Royal Club Nautic de Barcelona, excuse my Spanish there, and BWA Yachting. And the race was affiliated with the Superyacht Racing Association. We're media partners, I should also say. And we were there to report live on all the action. The winners were V, followed by Jassy, Nefertiti, and in the cruising class, Halakai scooped the big prize, followed by Essence and Fidelis. Great fun was had by one and all.
Amazing. So the videos on our socials looked insane as
yeah,
well.
Absolutely.
So exciting.
Yeah.
So yes, some mega news actually is that the 136-metre Flying Fox has been removed from the US sanctions list. According to the list published by the Office of Foreign Assets Control, a branch of the US Department of the Treasury, according to the office, the yacht has been flagged on the basis of its link to Imperial Yachts, a Monaco-based brokerage firm. Flying Fox then returned to the charter market in January 2024 with Bluewater Yacht in Dubai, and following the removal of US sanctions, is now available for charter globally. Speaking on this, Bluewater Yacht in Dubai said that we are pleased to confirm that all clients, including the Americans, are once again welcome, as all brokers, including those from the United States, to charter Flying Fox. In June 2022, Imperial Yachts and its CEO were subject to sanctions, and the yacht was named in a statement by the US Department of Treasury as blocked property in which Imperial Yachts has an interest. The same month, Imperial Yachts ceased all commercial activities and later posted a liquidation notice on its company website. So big news there, and something that we've actually been really interested in. And it was kind of a convoluted, complicated arrangement. But it's been a really interesting story as that's unfolded.
Yeah.
And now we know. Charter away.
Absolutely. I remember looking around her at the, I think it was the Monaco Yacht Show a few years ago. I mean, she is
massive.
Massive, spectacular, incredible spaces, amazing deck spaces, amazing cooking facilities outside. I mean, just
that's so cool.
Beautiful boat.
Really cool.
And on the subject of charter.
So normally this is the point where we do the brokerage picks, but as it's us, we're going to change it up from the normal brokerage picks. And I was a bit worried about this, I must admit.
So Georgia was concerned that she was going to have to slag off a charter yacht, and I explained that
I can't
that wasn't
do that. The yachts, I don't feel bad because it's not my remit. I don't feel bad for slagging off, like, I should say, having an opinion on brokerage yachts. But we're going to do charter selections.
We're going to do charter selections, and we're going to be nice about them.
We're going to be so nice. But I've picked a beautiful yacht, so I'm going to be nice about it.
Okay, kick us off then, Georgia.
So I have gone for the beautiful green 58.3 meter Pink Shadow. It's part of the Darman Sea Explorer range, which was created in partnership with EOS, and which basically means it was designed from the ground up. It's like the ultimate explorer machine. And this is just, it's so commanding as a profile that it's really exciting. Her interiors too are just, they're a little bonkers, which I really like, but they work incredibly well. And they follow a theme, which I think that often people get wrong, but this has been done so beautifully and so incredibly that I just love it. This was actually designed by Design Unlimited and inspired by that by Amazonian adventure drama Fitzcarraldo.
Yeah.
That's mental, isn't it?
Yeah, like particularly if you've seen Fitzcarraldo.
But have you?
I have.
I haven't. The theme continues with the Habana Room and an upper deck cigar lounge made complete with a bespoke humidor. The sun deck is really cool too, with a large dining table, jacuzzi pool, interior bar and lounge area. And even the bridge has characteristic style and flair, according to the broker. Yeah, there's a crocodile teeth table and sofa.
Wow.
Which is pretty funky. But it looks really cool. And I just, the main saloon is really, it's sort of really open and breezy, and again has this like tiki or this theme or like this tiki vibe, and I think it's beautiful.
Yeah,
so that's my pick.
The antithesis to a bland charter yacht.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm just on. This is actually Pink Shadow is available to charter with Wyco. For request information, POA, and interestingly, it's going to South America.
Is it?
So and Antarctica. So that will be incredible. Imagine that. Heli skiing in Antarctica on Pink Shadow.
I mean, that would be the dream. But another dream would be my charter pick of the week, which is the 81.3 metre Ocean Go Alfa Nero.
Oh my God, that's a good one.
Yeah. So she has returned to the charter market, and she's a legendary boat. Mm. She is, I think, she's most famous for her massive aft-deck pool, which most people will know. I mean, it was perhaps more distinctive a few years back when she was launched, because she was the first with a spectacular pool like that. So I mean, she really did turn heads, and she's still the trailblazer, and she's still beautiful. So the yacht was sold in July, which ended legal wranglings and issues following her arrest in 2022. The yacht was sitting in English Harbour for 2 years. She was then declared abandoned by the government of Antigua and Barbuda In June 2023, she was sold at auction to former Google CEO Eric Schmidt for $67 million, just over $67 million. But the sale was not finalised due to legal complications. Today, however, we see an imminent return to her former glory on the charter market following her sale, which has cleared all the outstanding debts and sorted out all of the legal issues. So the yacht is now in the middle of a refit and will be ready to welcome brokers on board during the Antigua Charter Show.
Exciting. I'm going to be there.
Exactly. Well, there you go.
Charter brokers and me.
And Georgia.
For lunch.
Keep your eye out for Georgia trying to sneak on board. As I was saying, the yacht's really famous for a spectacular swimming pool, which has a built-in current and an infinity edge at the aft end with a kind of waterfall effect. She has beautiful exteriors by Nuvolari Leonard and interiors by Alberto Pinto. Inside, the styling was inspired by pop art and art deco, with bright, vibrant colour schemes, zigzag woodwork and bold striped flooring, creating a very dynamic atmosphere inside. So another yacht that's really not cool. Boring, basically.
Really, really cool. When she's been there for the last two Antigua shows, and it's so nice now that it's going to be part of the show, because it puts a real, it bookends it, it just ends it. She's now back to where she was before. She's going to be made beautiful again. And it was quite a depressing sight, because she was right in the middle of the show and everyone could see it. And it had a sort of that sign that everyone talks about, which is the kind of saying it was impounded or however, whatever the wording was. But it was a really sad sight to see, and now I'm just so pleased that
it's a happy ending,
and I've got to get on there for lunch.
Yeah, there you go. So she's available for charter with Northrop & Johnson, with a weekly rate starting at $812,500.
Very good. So should we do a little bit of data?
Yes, let's do it.
So on running on the charter theme, we thought, well, it's actually Caroline's idea, but we thought it would be good to...
It's actually Stuart's idea.
Oh, right. Well, it's Stuart's idea, but he's not here.
It's my idea.
It's Caroline's idea. So we thought we'd look at where the concentrations of yachts have been for the med season. Based on, and we actually spoke about this on a previous podcast, but it's a bit of a weird data set for this season in general, because it was quite a stormy start to the charter season and to the season in general. So everything shifted a little bit later, although, as I'm sure, I mean, everyone found in Monaco is a bit wet this end of the season as well. So let's see what happens. So between June the 1st and October the 1st, there have been 1,932 yachts in the Western Med and 1,012 yachts in the Eastern Med. And that is of the total yachts recorded of 2,944 that we've recorded on BoatPro. Consistently, since 2019, yachts have continued to congregate more on the Western Med. But this year, the gap was actually a little bit smaller, which was interesting, and more balance between the East and Western Med, which was quite interesting. So within the same time frame, the popular spots are the usual suspects, with Ibiza, Saint-Tropez, Portocervo, Monaco and Mykonos up there. They've all remained fairly balanced in terms of distribution, but Portocervo saw the most super yachts it's had in the last 5 years, with 869 vessels, and is more than any of these places, actually. Ibiza and Mykonos both saw marginal dips, but nothing too mega. Mykonos had 27 less super yachts in 2024, and Ibiza had 77 less yachts, slightly more of a dip there. But it's the distribution, I don't think that kind of screams that that yachts aren't still going to these places in at force, basically. But I just think that was the year that we had, and there are other places to see. So I don't read into that too much, but I think Portocervo is still kind of head and shoulders above everything else.
But it is interesting what you're saying about, so the Eastern Med versus the Western Med. Obviously, the Western Med's traditionally been the spot for super yachts. But looking at the past few years, so 2019, there were 602 super yachts, or yachts above 24 metres, in the Eastern Med between June 1st and October 1st. Mm-hmm. In the Western Med, there were 1,643. The next year, it was 588 in the Eastern Med and 1,331. So the vast majority in 2019, right up until 2021, the vast majority of yachts were still going to the Western Med. Whereas now it is looking, while obviously the Western Med is still the more popular region, it's evening out quite significantly.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah. I think it's really exciting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's all from us. Thank you very much for that. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of Boat Briefing, a production of Boat International Media. This week's podcast was edited by Adam Geist. Do remember to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next time.